You are listening to the Archery Maniacs Podcast.
This is Remy Warren.
I am Rihanna Carey.
My name is Adam Foss.
This is Paul Tedford, professional archer.
Hey everyone, I'm Christy Titus, and you are listening to Archery Maniac.
We cover everything archery, from the hunting side to the tournament side, with stories, tips and tactics, gear reviews, and more.
That helped my tuning game so much when I made sure that all my arrows were square.
And I'm just staring into his eyes. Blood's dripping off of its tines. Mud is everywhere.
The clarity these mavens offer is amazing.
I'm just like Spider-Man, you know, on this rock, you know, just laying there.
Belly crawling in there, and I can barely fit in there, and I can hear the cat growling at me.
So I put my hand on his shoulder and pushed him, and we just ran at this elephant.
All right, in this episode, staying true to the antelope opener being August 15th, a couple days ago, we are sharing three antelope hunting stories. One is with Casey Higley. It's an antelope failure hunting story. Another is with Link Casey. It's a Wyoming antelope hunt success story. And another is with Andrea Larson, codename Aqua Antelope. So I hope you enjoy these couple stories, and I hope it keeps you pumped up for antelope season.
All right, so we're going to talk about spot and stock antelope hunting in southeast Idaho.
Woohoo!
So anyone that says spot and stock and antelope in the same sentence is insane. My hunting partner and I had found a very good area that was had a lot of antelope traveling from up in the higher desert down into the alfalfa field. And so we were up in the fingers of the public land working these antelope, doing spot and stock. And I had a doe, a fawn, and an average buck. He wasn't real big, but it was getting down to the second to last day we were going to be hunting. We'd been hunting for 4 days prior. And so I made a belly crawl stock up through the sagebrush on this buck as he fed down towards the alfalfa. And I got down to 49 yards from the trail, and then it just opened up to just grass where I couldn't get any closer. So I waited for them to feed towards me. And as they got to me, I ranged the doe at 49 yards, and I got set, and I waited for the buck to step where she had stepped before I drew my bow. I drew my bow without them noticing I was there, and I released the arrow. As I released the arrow, the buck decided he wanted to sprawl out and hit his belly on the ground. About 6 inches over his back, right above the money zone, right above the heart and lungs, just right over his back. And of course he did what all antelope do, and he ran about 95 miles an hour back up on the mountain.
Right? They do. It's like they have a whole nother gear, just like a coyote. You know, when you shoot a coyote and you miss it, they have a whole nother gear when they're getting the hell out of Dodge.
Oh, yes, they do.
Same with an antelope.
Antelope and coyotes, they have a gear that you think, well, did I hit him because he's running like he's death run? No, no, no. He's just running to get the hell out of there because you missed him.
Like, let's be honest. Wouldn't you be running faster if somebody was shooting at you? Come on.
Oh, yeah. I'm a short, fat guy, but I'd run as fast as my little leg would take me.
I'm short, too, so don't feel bad. So with your antelope, you know, belly crawling is honestly never fun. I've done my fair share of it. So when you were starting to make the decision to go put a stock on this antelope, was there any part of you that was like, well, let's just wait for a little bit longer for maybe a different stock to where I don't have to belly crawl the whole time? Or were you just kind of like all in?
Always.
That's perfect.
Hey, it's just like, hey, I want to shoot this animal. I'm going to do everything in my power to get to it, to do it. And if I blow the stock, well, that was my fault. No one else's. But my dad always told me you miss every shot you don't take. And I feel the same way with stalking in on an animal. You miss every stock you don't try.
Yep.
Yep. I mean, if you don't try, if you're not, if you're not willing to belly crawl and get a few cactuses in your knees and things like that, you know, you're probably not going to kill that. In that country, you're not going to kill an antelope.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I agree completely. I sometimes am too aggressive when I'm hunting. Too aggressive and too impatient usually equal non-successful. But I'm of the same mindset too, where when I see an animal somewhere and I look up there, there's really no part of me that says I don't think I can make this happen. It's pretty much like, yep, this is gonna happen.
Yep, I'm the same way. I'm the optimistic guy. Everyone's yep. like, you can't do it. And I'm like, I'm gonna try to prove you wrong. And hey, sometimes in life I prove people wrong. Other times they've laughed in my face. But if I wanted to try it, I would have never known.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's that. I mean, that, you know, and belly crawling through that grass like that, that yellow, that's like 10 inch tall grass, is tough work, man. It's, and there's no room for, you know, crawling on your knees or peeking your head up to see if they're still there. Or, I mean, you just pretty much crawl until that spot that you said you can stop crawling, until you get there, and then you can finally get up. But that, while you're crawling in that grass like that, it is literally all crawling, and that is it.
That is exactly what it is. You just crawl, and when you get to your spot, you look up, and either you're lucky or they're 400 yards away and your buddy's laughing.
Yeah, you pull one of those where you poke your head up and you're like, huh, it's not there.
they're not still feeding this way. Where are they? And, oh, they're up on the mountain running. All you can see is dust. Well, that's where they went.
Yeah, that's like never happened to me.
Yeah, I call bullshit.
It, you know what? You are perfectly right to be calling bullshit on that one. With your antelope stalking and stuff like that, do you usually try to wait till they're bedded to stalk on them, or do you try to pattern them a little bit and like get in front of them on the way to their watering hole? Or, you know, what's kind of your, I mean, I know you like spot and stalk, but I kind of consider, like, if you see an animal heading in a certain direction and you get in front of them, I mean, that's more of ambush style, but it's a lot more spot and stalk than just sitting in a blind all day. You know what I mean?
You know, that's what I'm considering spot and stalk. What we're doing is we're sitting pretty close to the edge of the alfalfa with our glass, and we'll find where the antelope are coming, and we find, because, you know, they've got pretty defined trails where they're coming into certain fields. And so, well, okay, I think they're going to be on this field. They're going to go through this finger to get there. So, you know, that's when we try to make our stalk and try to get in front of them, say, you know, 50, 60 yards in front of them from on the trail that they're going to be coming on.
Gotcha. Gotcha. That makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so we're doing an ambush / spot and stalk all combined in one.
I gotcha.
Yeah, because those antelope, they're weird. They're bedding up on these ridges, on the windswept ridges, where there's not a piece of sagebrush in sight. And there'll be 40 or 50 of them, you know, bedded up there. It's just like, there's no way you're going up there and getting on those.
You could like get like an ultralight airplane and fly in there.
Yeah, that's about the only way to do it. You'd have to shoot the airplane while they're running too. They're not going to stick around.
Right? Oh, cool, man. So do you feel that the antelope jumped your string because he was on high alert, or because your bow was loud, or just purely because antelope have a tendency to jump strings?
I think it was a combination of everything. He wasn't looking at me as I pulled my bow back and everything, but as I released, he turned his head towards me. And so, you know, if he could see the arrow coming, you know, their vision, he could see the arrow coming, I feel. And then the bow, I think, was a little too loud. Like I said earlier when we were talking, I definitely think I need to try to quiet this thing down a little bit. And then antelope, they all jumped the string.
Right? Yeah, I agree. I agree. Well, I've been there. I've had them, like, almost turn completely around in a full circle before my arrow got there. So I understand exactly what that feels like. So I appreciate you being willing to be open and share your story with me, because I know there's a lot of other antelope hunters out there that have experienced the same thing.
Yep. And a lot of people, they're too prideful. Oh no, I've never missed an antelope. And I just say bullshit.
I've never missed just one. I've missed like 10, 20, 30.
Everyone that's archery antelope hunted has had one jump their string. If they haven't, then they shot at one.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. Take me to where you're antelope hunting if you haven't.
That's my new favorite place.
Oh, man. Well, I appreciate it, man. Well, I look forward to having you back on and sharing more stories and talking hunting and all that kind of good stuff.
Sounds good. Great to talk with you.
Now we're going to dive into Link Casey and his antelope success story. We also cover a little bit about, having a bad shot on an animal and, you know, having to put in a second shot. We talk a little bit about an elk that happened to me on, some other deer situations that's happened with Link on, and we cover a couple other topics as well. So I hope you enjoy his story.
I'm Link Casey from Northwest Georgia.
And I'm your host, Zach Harold.
And this is Archery Maniacs.
Yeah, that's what's happening.
Yeah, Archery Maniacs from the Red Zone.
Yeah, stories from the Red Zone. So, Well, how about a story that was a success?
Success story, okay. Well, I tell you, I'll do another Western story. It was kind of a botched situation, but it turned out to be a success in the long run, which you were a part of this one also.
I think I already got an idea which one it is. Great story.
That antelope.
Yep.
So, all right. So, which in hunting out there is a lot different than hunting here, which, I mean, obviously, you know, you've been down here and hunted with me and I've been out there and hunted with you, you know, down here, there's so many woods and forests and stuff. It's really hard to scout. Any kind of animal, you know, from a long distance, you know, unless you've got, you know, a huge cornfield or bean field, something like that. So, you know, you and I, you know, we're riding around these dirt roads and, you know, we're scouting for these antelope and everything. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, how in the hell are we going to kill one of these antelope with a bow and there's no trees to hide behind and no bushes or anything like that? I'm like this big blob of nothing, you know, trying to sneak up on this antelope out here. This ain't going to work worth a damn. And I'm thinking about this the whole time. Well, you know, so we're scouting around and we find a real nice goat and, mature antelope, pronghorn, whatever I call them, antelope. Y'all call them antelope out there? Y'all
say, it depends. Speed goats, antelope. I very rarely say pronghorn.
Yeah, pronghorn's kind of like that, that Northeastern don't know what the hell they're talking about kind of thing, I guess.
Honestly, it's annoying to me when I hear it. I'm like...
that's what the Boone and Crockett calls them.
Yep, there you go.
Anyway, so we scout this antelope. I mean, he's real nice. And now, as far as I know, like, I don't know what's a trophy and what's not, you know, going off of what you're saying. You know, his bases look real good. He's got a pretty good curl to him, and you know, it's his front stickers look good. And I'm like, all right, well, you say he looks good. Let's go kill him. You know, let's do that. All right. All I needed was one good and I'd be good to go. So sneaking up on this thing, and one thing that I have learned to contend with by hunting out there with you is the wind. What wind? Mm-hmm. Like gale force, like hurricane winds with no ocean.
Yeah, it's so funny you bring that up, because people are like, man, it's been so windy. I'm like, oh, really? Like, what do you mean? And they, you know, 15-mile-an-hour wind. I'm like, that's like the slight breeze here. When we think windy, we think 60-plus.
Yeah, you know, 15, 20-mile-an-hour wind down here in Georgia, I'm worried if my roof's going to stay on the house, you know. So, I mean, make a very successful stalk on this antelope, which I was very surprised about that, you know, because and it almost seems like he was kind of stupid, to be honest.
Sorry to break up the story. When you are stalking antelope, it is all about using the terrain features available.
Mm-hmm.
All about it, because even though the desert and the sagebrush look flat, there is a lot of dips and nooks and crannies and water cuts that, and when you find a water cut out there, literally some of them can be 30 foot deep. But you can find the ones that are 2 foot deep, and they work perfect for getting you from point A to point B to stalk these animals. So just wanted to throw that in there. But anyways, go ahead, finish your story, my man. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, that's fine. Cause I was actually going to say that same thing. Cause I mean, that's what we used, you know, with, you know, getting behind some sagebrush here and getting down to some of those little water cuts and coulees and, you know, making our way around and using the wind. And I mean, it was a lot of fun. It was really educating to me on how poor my stalking skills were, you know, compared to here with so much, you know, stuff in between me and whatever I'm trying to kill. It's a little easier, you know, than it is out there. But, you know, so, it, you know, make a real successful stalk on this antelope. Well, for some reason, and it was my own fault, I knew he was quartering away, but I didn't know he was quartering away that much as he was. So, I was using those same broadheads, those dead ringer extremes with a, you know, the huge three blade, you know, huge cut on them. And so when I shot, as soon as I released the arrow, I was like, oh my God, you have shot him in the butthole. I mean, I thought I shot him right in the ass. But turns out, I mean, it went right behind that last rib and the exit hole was perfect right at the heart. And I'm like, oh man, this just worked out perfect. Because when I drew my bow and pulled up, I mean, that wind was just kilting that bow just back and forth and back and forth. I was trying to hold that thing steady. And I kind of shot in between bubbles, you know, get that little level bubble on your sight there. I was kind of trying to time the wind with that bubble. And when I released it, I mean, it was terrible. But then when it hit, I was like, oh, we're good. You know, so he runs off there and he lays down and then he gets up and walks off and lays down and gets up, walks off. And we're looking at him in the binoculars and, you know, like, man, I shot him so far back. Well, then, he, when he turned, and we saw that hole right behind his shoulder, I mean, right at his heart, like, oh, man, he's going to die any second now.
Mm-hmm. They were dumping blood out of it.
Just pour, like you took a paint bucket and dumped it upside down, you know. And how he stayed alive that long, I have no idea. But come to find out, however long we sat there, well, we sat there, what, 45 minutes?
Quite a while. Like
It was a pretty, we didn't time it. It was a pretty good while, though. And that sun gun just would not die. We're like, man, we're going to have to make another stalk on this thing to get him killed. That way he don't, you know, suffer. And, you know, we need to make this quick. Well, I have never stalked up on an animal this close in my life with a bow. So he finally goes off in one of these little water cuts and beds down.
Yeah, after about, let's be honest, though. I mean, you and I tried to stalk up on him like 3 or 4 times. It just wasn't happening.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah, we did stalk on him about 3 or 4 times, and met that sun gun, one or two times those other bucks that were with him, they would spook on us, then he would spook and run off, and then I think one time he busted us.
Yeah, the one time he had his head laying on the ground, like, I thought he was dead. I'm like, oh, this would be great, we'll walk up there and he'll be dead. We start getting closer, and he like throws his head up and looks right at us, and I'm like, ah, well, we're screwed, there he goes.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it took forever to get back on this thing, and finally, he gets in one of those little water cuts, you know, that she's talking about. And I'm sitting there and sneaking up on him, which you were on the back. You were on the back behind me sitting there videoing it.
Yep.
And that's when we run out of video, wasn't it? It was.
Yep. And then I started using the Garmin Verb.
Yeah, that's right. That thing ain't got no zoom on it. But so I'm sneaking up on this thing. And I thought, and the funny part is I thought he was about 30 yards further down this little water cut. So as I'm creeping up there, all of a sudden I see the tips of his horns, and he is no more than 5 feet in front of me, and he's looking. And, like, he doesn't think that I can see him, because, I mean, he's behind this sagebrush, and I can see the tops of his horns, and then I can see, you know, see one eyeball sitting there looking at me through the sagebrush, you know. And I'm sitting there, I've turned back at you, and I'm like, he's right here. He's right here. You know. So I'm like, how is this even going to work? you know, I can't shoot through this sagebrush. I can't see any other part of his body. If I jump him and he jumps up and stops, I don't know how far he's going to be away from me. I don't have enough time to range him, you know. So, and I kind of just wing it, which it sounds bad when you say winging it, especially when it comes to, you know, killing an animal. So I draw my bow back, kick the sagebrush. He jumps up and he just pops out there, stands perfectly broadside. And I put the 30-yard pin on him and nailed him. And he ran over there and endowed in the sagebrush, you know. But that was almost a failed story that turned into a success story.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I think, you know, you hear, you know, well, let's start with why do you think that story worked out in our favor? Let's start with that.
Well, the biggest thing is, number one, the first shot wasn't that good, but it was good enough to where we could at least put another stalk on him. And the number one thing is that we didn't give up on trying to get him. There was no way that I was going to quit on trying to kill that animal, because I had already put one arrow in him, and I could physically see him wherever he went in that desert area we were. You know, there was no way that I was going to give up on not killing him.
Yep.
You know, so it's just, I mean, you know, persistence and, you know, not getting discouraged with it, which, yeah, I was getting kind of pissed off there a time or two, but, you know, you can't get discouraged with it. I mean, you can't give up on it, you know, and because, I mean, it's going to happen. And eventually, yeah, that antelope probably would have died, but it would have took so long for him to die. Because when we dressed him out, that hole, I mean, it was directly under his heart. It never touched his heart the first time.
Yeah.
Which was amazing with that huge expandable broadhead that I had, but it was just low enough where it never touched heart. And, you know, just the persistence in it, you know, turned it into a success, you know, hunt instead of a failed hunt.
Yeah. And I want, you know, just kind of to mention that as a bow hunter, we learn that when you make a shot, you lay back and you wait for the animal to expire. You know, then you're not pushing the animal. You're not, you know, you're not making it any worse for the animal, because it's just like when you cut yourself really quickly, like the animal, they feel sick. That's, you know, chances are, like I've been shot before. I probably shouldn't say that, but I have. And you don't really feel it. So when you just think about, you know, how many times you've cut your fingers, like you don't technically just feel it slicing through your fingers. You see the blood and then it slowly starts to hurt. Well, with that antelope, he just feels sick, so he's going to lay down, he's going to die. So they teach you, lay back, you know, don't. But it was so hot out there that the animal, that him even getting sick, even though he was still alive, it was just going to get nasty. And so we had to make the decision, you know, do we want to expire? You see it a lot in the whitetail woods, you know, where they leave a whitetail overnight and they go find him in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that just, it was so early in the day, because, I mean, what'd you, your first shot was at like 9 in the morning or 8 in the morning. I mean, it was pretty early.
Oh, yeah.
So there's like the option to just let him lay there all day just wasn't in our favor in that situation. So that's why we worked so hard to get another stalk in and get another good shot. So.
Yeah. Well, and then that one time when he completely laid down and had his head on the ground, we really weren't even going to go after him at that point. We were just going to sit there and watch him. And then when he laid down, we're like, oh, okay, he's good to go, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then when he hopped back up and ran off, you know, then that's when we made the decision. We need to go ahead and put another arrow in him and get him finished.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I just was like, yeah, he's definitely dead, you know, because animals very rarely, I mean, they might sleep with their head on the ground, but very rarely is their head sideways on the ground, you know, with one horn or antler laying on the ground. And that's how he was laying, with a horn on the ground. I was like, oh, well, he's dead right there. I'm like, we're good to go. Yeah. Started walking over there, boing, and there he went. I was like, son of a bitch, there he goes.
You know, and everybody has done that at some point. You know, everybody has. And don't let, you know, anybody that's bow hunted for a certain amount of years, or even a new bow hunter, you know, don't ever, you know, if you're eventually going to shoot an animal that you might have to stalk again, or you might have to give him an hour or two to expire or something like that. You know, I mean, it's going to happen if it hadn't happened already. And it's a crappy feeling, you know, when you have to do something like that. But, you know, it doesn't always work out perfect.
Yeah. Yep. It comes down to being part of, and I don't really like to call bow hunting a sport. I call it more of a lifestyle, but it's part of it. It's just like a coach coaching a basketball game and he uses his timeouts in an unwise decision. And you're like, well, why the hell do you use them then? Say, you know, that's just part of the basketball game. Just like a shot like that and having an occurrence. If, like you said, if you bow hunt any amount of time, eventually, going back to even the pros, you'll have a bad shot where the animal doesn't go and die instantly like you hoped. You always hope for it, though, obviously. I mean, that's the main goal. But, man, shit doesn't always happen like that.
Oh, no. And sometimes it's the most freak thing. I remember when I had only been bow hunting just for a few years and was still pretty fresh into it. You know, I was here at home in Georgia whitetail hunting. And I drew back on this deer. It was a doe. You know, I drew back on this doe. And when I shot, one of my fletchings, which I've always used a Whisker Biscuit arrow rest, which I like them because, you know, as rough as I am and move that bow around, the arrow don't fall off. But it kind of screwed me at this point, I guess. But, you know, when I shot in that, those fletchings went through that with those little hairs on that Whisker Biscuit, it peeled one of my fletchings back. And as that arrow was flying from, you know, the string to that deer, I mean, that thing, it almost made like a U-turn. You know, I mean, it was going to be a perfect shot. And then that fletch got ripped and I hit her right in the guts, you know. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it took forever to track that deer down. You know, and that was just a freak accident.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that is not something that you could have planned for. I mean,
yeah.
But that's going to be part of it. That's part of it. So.
Oh, yeah.
Well, cool, man. Well, thanks for sharing a few of your success and failure stories. And we got on a few little tangents, or I guess I did. I don't know if you really did, but I sure as hell did.
It happens sometimes.
And, but either way, I think definitely shared some stories that people will be able to learn from. And if they don't learn anything, at least they'll enjoy it because it'll get them in the mood and in the mindset for doing some hunting with their bows. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, yeah, you're most welcome. And, you know, it's always great to tell, you know, stories like this. You know, success stories and failure stories and stuff. Cause with bow hunting being such a rage right now, everybody's wanting to bow hunt or crossbow hunt, you know, something like that. It's a lot different than hunting with a rifle. You know, mm-hmm. you've got to be a little bit more in tune with what you're shooting. And sometimes things are going to happen and everybody's out there like, holy crap, this only happens to me. This doesn't happen to anybody else. Yeah. It happens to everybody at some point. Don't worry.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a great point to make. Like, trust us, it's happening to other people and not just people in your state. Like, anyone that's out there bow hunting, is that probably happening somewhere to them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you watch these hunting shows on TV, you know, like the Michael Waddell and, you know, Bill Jordan and, you know, Cameron Haynes and all these big top hunters on television and stuff now. And I mean, and what you're seeing on TV is you're seeing those, you know, those good shots or those mediocre shots, and they're harvesting these huge deer and all that. But what you don't see is, you know, because I mean, they can't put everything into a 30-minute show. You know, you don't see them sitting there for 8-9 hours a day for 5 days in a row, and then that's the first deer that walks up, and it happens to be a nice buck, and they make a good shot, or they might make a bad shot. You know, so I mean, it doesn't happen like on TV every single day you go in the woods, you know.
That's no kidding. And if you want to see some realism on your hunts, on other people's hunts, be looking out for Archery Maniacs. We're going to start be posting some hunts on YouTube, but also check out Born and Raised Outdoors. It's one of the most real, just like Solo Hunter. Solo Hunter is very real as well. Those are two very, very real, and then the Full Draw Film Tour. Those are very real occurrences in actual hunting scenarios that are very unedited situations. You know, they don't delete the bad shots. Bow Hunter Die, they don't delete their bad shots either, which I completely respect, because people have got to realize that even the guys on TV make shitty shots. Like, that is a part of it. I mean, it just is. So, yeah. So thanks for sharing your stuff, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Anytime. I enjoy it talking on here.
All right, and we are going to end off this antelope extravaganza with Andrea Larson sharing her aqua antelope story. I hope you enjoy it.
Well, seeing as I don't have any archery successes yet, it's going to be a failure.
Okay.
But it's a fun failure.
Okay, well, whichever one you want to share, you just share your story.
Operation Aqua Antelope. Okay, so last year I was hunting antelope. I have had the 900 tag that I put in for every year that's archery only. I hunt with traditional equipment that I've actually built with my own hands. So I have an Osage bow and wooden arrows that I use. And antelope hunting is a pretty big passion of mine. They're super fun to chase around. I mean, they're out all day, so it's not like deer and elk where you just have to worry about morning and evening. And I'm not much of a morning person anyway, so I really enjoy chasing antelope around in the middle of the day. And this was actually towards the end of the day. I have a kind of a circuit of spots locally that I like to check out that tend, they're public land that tend to have antelope on them. And there's one area that has an irrigation ditch running across it. And it's one of the irrigation ditches that pretty much always has water in it, no matter what. I was just sort of casually checking out my spots. It was nearing the end of the day, so I wasn't too optimistic about what I would see, but came up to one of these spots, and there was a buck and two does on the piece, on the edge of the piece, and they were feeding towards the irrigation ditch. And I recognized the buck. He was actually the one that my husband had been chasing in the prior weeks before he had shot another antelope. And we called him Dirty Hooker because he had one prong that horn that kind of went like real kind of sideways, and it was kind of awkward looking. He had real thin, tall horns on him. He was pretty distinct, and so, you know, I immediately saw him and was like, "You dirty hooker!" and grabbed my bow and arrows, and I didn't know what I was gonna do because he wasn't in a great spot. And there was a fence between me and him that I had to get to. And then I had to get down into the irrigation ditch to even have a chance at getting him. But I knew because of that irrigation ditch that there was a strip of grass on either side of it that was always very green that the antelope really liked to feed on. And so I was like, well, if I can get in the irrigation ditch and get while he's feeding, I could possibly get close enough to actually get a shot at him. And so I had to do the limbo underneath the bottom wire of a barbed wire fence because I couldn't go over it because he would have seen me jump the fence with my bow and everything, shimmied under there, belly crawled my way full dip and over the little ride, like sort of just did one of those sneaky things, looked around, and you know, didn't have his head up or anything, and looped myself over the rim of this irrigation ditch and down into it. And when I got into it, it was about, but it was below my knees. So I was in a crouch, bow and quiver in hand, and was sneaking forward and sneaking forward. And I think I had a decoy with me too. It was a Montana decoy, antelope decoy, to hide behind, give myself a little bit of extra cover. Well, as I kind of was shimmying down the irrigation ditch, I decided that was probably a waste and left it there, which it still may be laying there. I think I lost it. But I continued down this irrigation ditch, and I was very excited because I realized if I moved my legs in the right way, I made no noise. I mean, the normal kind of crunchy antelope season, worm dry grass, you feel like you're walking on potato chips as you're trying to sneak up to stuff. It was the complete opposite of that. And so, so I was moving real slow, kind of marveling at myself of how quietly I was moving along. And, was keeping an eye on him. I'd occasionally pop my head up. There was a nice strip of, you know, there's a lot of kind of bushy grass and things along the edge of the irrigation ditch. And so they were on the one, okay, let's say they were on the west side of the irrigation ditch, and I was getting closer and getting closer, but they kept feeding and feeding and feeding up as I was going. And so they were kind of outpacing me a little bit. And I mostly had my eyes on those does, because if you've ever hunted antelope, you know, it's the bucks are pretty oblivious. They're kind of dumb, but it's the ladies that'll get you every time. And so, you know, they've got their head on a swivel. And so I'm just looking and checking it out and, you know, making sure that they're not paying attention. And I was glad because he only had two does with him. And, you know, you get that big group where he's got a dozen does. And yeah, no thanks. There's no beating that many pairs of eyes. So it was just a perfect situation. And I was kind of floating along, and the irrigation ditch kept getting deeper and deeper. And I was like, what am I doing here? I sure hope my rangefinder's waterproof. and sort of sneak, but I at that point I just didn't care. I was like, what, money's money. This is an opportunity that I'm never gonna get ever again. So, but don't let my husband hear that, actually, because that rangefinder was my wedding present.
Oh, kind of no.
I would have had a lot of explaining to do after that one. But yeah, so I had my bow in hand and everything. I went from, you know, I was kind of ankle deep. I was in a crouch, and then the crouch got painful. I had to go quite a ways. And so I kind of committed. I was in clothing, and I think I had river shoes on, so at least wasn't in, you know, socks and sneakers. But so I got onto my knees and was kind of shimmying down, and it kept getting deeper and deeper. And I sort of had to go back into a crouch again, to the point where, oh no, I think I did most of it on my knees. And, but the water kept getting deeper and deeper, and I was about chest deep when I realized that I was very, very close to these goats. And the two does, actually, I heard them splash through the water. They had crossed to the other side, and the buck was kind of doing his little oblivious thing on the other side of the irrigation ditch. And I was getting closer and closer, and I was, but there was a bush in between me and him. And I was like, oh, I can't shoot around that bush. What's going to happen? Is he going to see me if he crosses through? Cause I was just, there was only so much I could do to sort of hug myself against the shore of the irrigation ditch to, you know, against that little dirt berm on either side to conceal myself. And there were a couple times when I made splashes, but I guess antelope in this country don't really get eaten by alligators and things. So splashes don't really bother them that much. So they didn't really care. They were pretty oblivious. So,
meanwhile, Andrew's over here drowning.
Yeah. So I'm chest deep in this water, and I realize I am close. I put an arrow on my string, and I am so close to this buck. He is just on the other side of this bush to me. I'm so close. I can hear him ripping the grass out of the ground, and I can hear his teeth squeak as they grind together as he's chewing. There's very few times in my life I've ever been that close to a wild animal, but that sound and that feeling, regardless of being chest deep in freezing water, was amazing. And all of a sudden, he looks up and realizes, oh, my ladies are on the other side, and decides to splash through. I was afraid he was going to come down on top of me, but thankfully he did it on the other side of the bushes and crossed over. And I realized this was my opportunity. And so very slowly I sort of tested standing up to see what I could see, you know, if I was tall enough just standing to get over the berm on the side of the irrigation ditch and see where he was. And he was there, and he was, you know, I saw horns, so I just watched the tip of his horns, and I felt like I had enough to stand up. And I watched his horns disappear. He had his head down feeding, and I stood up a little bit and drew my bow, and he took a couple steps, and so I kind of crouched back, you know, stopped drawing my bow, went back down, and watched him take a couple steps forward, and he walked, and his head was perfectly behind this little roly dirt pile, and he was feeding behind the dirt pile, so his head was perfectly hidden. And I stood up and I drew my bow again, and I took the shot. And I don't know if it was because I was freezing cold or because I didn't practice my cold bore shots enough, you know, just taking a shot after not doing anything, or if I'm just an idiot or all of the above, but I gave that poor goat a wicked haircut on his back and sent that arrow sailing into the distance. And he, I don't know if I nicked his back or what, but he jumped up and started running like the devil was after him, and did this huge loop around like practically this whole state section, came zooming past me on the other side of the irrigation ditch just to give me one last middle finger as he ran by. And I just zipped his way out of my life, and I was kicking myself so hard for that, but it was the coolest blown stalk, and I was sopping wet, shivering. I called my husband because he was within like a half an hour or so of where I was. Called him. I could barely hold on to the phone. I was shivering so hard because by the time I got back to the car, the sun had gone down, and I was just absolutely soaked to the bone. And, oh my gosh, what a ridiculous, awesome, amazing stalk. So I'm going to try that stalk again this year and hopefully connect on something. That irrigation ditch is my friend, and those goats feed so close to it, it's stick bow range all day long. So, but
that is awesome.
Super fun.
That is an epic story. I really, so
Operation Aqua Antelope is what I refer to that. Yeah,
awesome.
That was what it was.
So, when you know, at what point were you just like, I'm gonna do whatever it takes, even if I have to swim and drown in this canal, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get close enough to get a shot. Like, you know, because a lot of people are like, you know, I'll cross the creek or whatever else, but actually wading in the creek, that shit's not happening. You know what I mean?
Well, to me, hunting, like being successful in hunting is 100% about creating opportunities for yourself. And so if I was to just snub that opportunity just because it would make me uncomfortable for a while, then what good am I? Like, you know, you gotta be willing to put yourself in some awkward positions to really make it happen. I mean, I've got friends who have laid like in really awkward positions in a dip in the prairie for 45 minutes just to watch a buck walk by them to get in the right position, you know, or they got caught, you know, sneaking out and just had to lay low to not blow it, and have that zen like patience to be pretzeled up in the middle of the prairie for 45 straight minutes. So, you know, that's what it takes. The people I know with those awkward, horrible, ridiculous stories are the successful people. So that's what I got to do. And at that point I was like, well, you know, it's what's a little water.
There you go. So, you know, so how deep was the water when you shot?
It was probably, let's see here. I guess if it was
about waist deep or
chest deep, it was good and chest deep when I was on my knees, which means it was, yeah, probably about waist deep when I was standing to take the shot.
Okay. And you were shooting with your recurve?
Yep. Yeah, okay. With my longbow.
Longbow. I wonder if was the bottom limb still in the water? Do you know?
No, I can't my bow enough to where it was.
Okay.
And
okay.
I was kind of lifting it a little bit. Yeah, it probably body position was probably not super perfect. That probably contributed to me wanging it, but
No, the only reason I ask is I could imagine that if you have a limb in the water, that that would slow things down so much that just that in itself would make you miss, you know?
Yeah, that probably – I mean, I did a really good job of keeping my arrows and my bow clear of the water the whole time. I was pretty conscious of that, so I'm pretty sure it wasn't it. But I was also pretty excitable, so it's totally possible that I did have a limb in the water and just wasn't paying attention. I was just too fixated on the goat.
Right? No kidding. Well, seriously, that story was just epic. It really was. Like, I don't know that many people that are willing to do that. So, like I say, that was awesome. And I really appreciate you sharing the story with us, because not that many people are willing to just let's go swimming to shoot this antelope. They're just not, you know, I don't know how else to say it. They're just not.
Well, hopefully I'll be able to tell you the same story in about a handful of months here, except it ends with antelope backstraps on the grill. So.
Oh, I do like me some antelope backstraps. I do for sure. Well, like I say, it was a pleasure having you on the podcast. I thoroughly enjoyed the story, so I know a lot of other people are going to enjoy it as well. So thank you for sharing that with us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you for tuning into the show. It means a lot to us.
But seriously, though, I really appreciate your ear. And it would mean the world to me if you would rate our podcast. If you didn't like it, 1-star it. But if you did, a 5 is even better. Don't forget to comment, like, share, and hit that subscribe button. Thanks again for tuning into the show. Some other podcasts that you should definitely check out are
Eastman Elevating with Bride and Barney,
and Hunt Harvest Health with Ryan and Hillary Lambers.
Some other YouTube channels to check out:
Hardworking Hunter, Sterling's Extremes Outdoors, and Lane Walter Productions.
And a special thanks to
Maven Optics, Six Sight Gear, Dark Energy Tech, Shield Mountain Outdoors, The Outdoor Insiders, Iron Mind Hunting, Valkyrie Archery, and Gannett Ridge Sporting Equipment.